they're changing. It's a week of change for our developer community because of TechEd. We can blame all of these weird things with TechEd. There's a bunch of things that the product group wants to demonstrate next week in Barcelona. In order to do that, they are having to deploy a bunch of things in anyone that's in our what we call our first release. So you can actually opt in to get like the new features quicker. And the Office 365 tenant that I use happens to be in that first release group. So there are some interesting challenges with that. So, but anyway, we'll kind of jump into things. So there's a lot of overlap between this slide deck and the previous slide deck. So we're going to skip a good portion of the slides here. So this goes over some basics of universal apps, but I'm going to assume that you know some of that. If you were in the last session, we went over a lot of it, so I'm not going to go into any detail. Just as a reminder, universal apps, it's an app. I build it once. It runs two places. There might be some platform-specific things that I have to do, but for the most part, it's a common set of code, and in most cases, even common markup. You do need Visual Studio 2013 with Update 2 in order to build these universal apps. That's what will make the template show up in Visual Studio for you. But you don't need a fancy version of Visual Studio. You can use the free version, the Express version, to build these apps. You don't have to have Ultimate or Professional or anything like that. It really works across any of those. So I'm going to skip the universal app stuff, and let's talk about integrating Office 365. That's really what we were supposed to do different in this session, is talk about how we take the Office 365 services and consume those. So first step in doing that is we're going to add a connected service. If you've been to any of the Office 365 API sessions, you should have seen the connected service wizard. So that's going to be a consistent way of basically registering an application to be able to use Office 365. We go to the project, we right-click it, we say I want to add connected service, and then once we add that connected service and register the app, we pick what permissions we want, and we can at that point go and start building things. So again, just as a refresher, this is the steps that I go through, specifying permissions. That will add a number of different things to your project. So I made mention at one point today, and again, I don't know who all has been in all these sessions versus other ones, but in some cases with the Office 365 APIs, we're going to provide you with an actual .NET assembly, or an SDK, you could call it. This, by adding that reference, if there's an SDK available, it will add it to the project. If there's no SDK available, that doesn't mean you can't use Office 365 services. You just may not get the strongly typed classes that we have available in the SDK. It means I'm going to have to do things like call REST and then be able to work with that REST response, either the XML that comes back or the JSON that comes back, and convert that into class objects that I can then use within my user interface. So in this case, when I add a connected service, you can see that at least for the native Windows apps, it's going to add a number of references. So you can see things like Microsoft.Office365.MyFiles, Microsoft.Office365.Exchange. Those are a few of the platform-specific assemblies that I'm going to get by adding a connected service. Because this is a native app, at one point someone asked me today, can I connect to Office 365 APIs from a console application? And although it's not impossible, it is very challenging to do that. Because Office 365, and more specifically Azure Active Directory, owns the login form, right? It provides the login form for most customers, where they provide their credentials, they get logged in, and then we can pass back an access token. That all happens in a browser. That's hard to do from a console app. It's not impossible, but it would be hard for me to launch a browser from a console app and be able to get the response back from that browser to get my access token. In a native app, that's a similar challenge, but we can do it through something called passive authentication. So there's lots of controls that you can use in a XAML app, which is one of these, that's the markup that we are using to build these universal apps. One of the controls that I can use is an actual browser control. And so I could very easily display a browser control for the user and send them through an authentication process. And I can use events on that browser control to look to see when the URL changes in that browser. So as it gets, you've seen OAuth, it redirects you a bunch of times, but ultimately towards the end it actually passes back things like a context code and an access token and things like that. I can do that with a browser control, but we're going to make it even easier for you building these native apps. We actually have an authentication broker that's built into the .NET framework that I can basically just say, here's the place where I go to do OAuth, handle it for me. And it'll just, when you're done with the authentication process, it'll pass you back the token for you to start using. So it's going to be very easy for us to do that. In fact, when I add the Office 365 libraries, it's as simple as doing this. I simply call discoverycontext.createAsync. Now what it's going to do, it's going to try to go out to the Office 365 discovery service and get all the resources that the user has available to it. I didn't get to deliver the intro to Office 365, but what's interesting is my guess is they probably describe the discovery service as a way of determining what endpoints the APIs are at, right? Because remember, every user has a unique endpoint for their My Files, for their OneDrive for Business. So there's actually other purposes. Another purpose of the discovery service is to see what a user is licensed, what software they have available to them. Right? I could go out and call the discovery service for Steve, and if I don't get back OneDrive information, I know he probably is not a valid user of OneDrive. And so maybe I tell him in the app that, he's not valid. So in most apps that use the Office 365 APIs, our entry point will always be the discovery service, even if I'm using one of the services that I already know the endpoint for. So anything in Exchange, right, and that includes calendars, contacts, mail, it's all going to be at the same endpoint. It's outlook.office365.com/EWS/odata, right, for every user. So if I know that, why would I need to go to the discovery service? Well, it's because maybe that user doesn't have a mailbox, right, and so I need to make sure I check that, and the discovery service is my way of doing it. So this one line of code here is going to do all of that for me. First of all, when I try to call it and get all the discovery information for the user, so if it's me that's logging in, it's going to go say, well, we need all the discovery information, all the information about Richard. But they're not going to give that to me without logging in first, right? That would be a breach of privacy and security. And so one of the things that line of code will do is when it goes to try to get the discovery information, if you're not logged in, it's going to send you to login, and we'll take a look at how that what that looks like. And it'll launch that web authentication broker that we talked about. And this is what it looks like. It'll automatically launch. It looks like a dialogue, kind of, that'll have you sign in, authorize the app, And then once you authorize the app, you can start working with the data. There are platform-specific clients that you can use. So you can see that there's one specific for Exchange and one specific for SharePoint. So they're specific assemblies that you get to work with so that you're not having to just call REST APIs. We'll look at also doing REST APIs, but just know that these are out there for some of the store apps that we have. So here's an example of using the Exchange client. So you can see that I'm basically saying I want a new instance of the Exchange client. I'm passing in the endpoint URI, which again, we've already mentioned that's the same for every user, outlook.office365.com/EWS/odata. And then one of the things we're saying is once we get that context information back, I'm going to use that to start doing some things. So we're getting the access token that might be here. If you're new to Windows development, you've probably seen this a lot today, and I apologize if it hasn't been obvious, but you'll see the use of this keyword await in a lot of places. You'll see this, and you'll also see the use of the async keyword. So this is somewhat new to .NET. We released some of these capabilities to .NET about the same time as store apps came to Windows. So in the Windows 8 timeframe. So if they're new to you, let me just simplify it. Is for you to do asynchronous programming with .NET in the past, you had to deal with all these like callback functions, and it ended up like being really disjointed and hard. Like it wasn't hard to do, but you had to do like multiple steps. And ultimately, what Microsoft said is, now that we're doing more things asynchronously, because instead of going to a database, seems like nowadays we go out to REST or OData endpoints more. Those might have more latency where I need to do things asynchronously. So let's make asynchronous processing easier. And that's all they've done here, is they've basically said, instead of having to deal with a callback, right, where normally if I did something asynchronously, I would have to say, okay, when it's done, call this method. Instead of me having to have a separate method, I can use the await word, and what will happen is we'll just hang out there. We'll let the thread kind of keep going, but we'll be able to pick things up once the response comes back here. And so it's just an easier way to do asynchronous programming. So I sometimes think they put this in all these slides, and I see a lot of people that are new to this, and they're just like, what in the world is going on with all this await and async? And those, again, are to make the processing easier asynchronously. Sorry, that was a little bit of a sidetrack, but here's some of the things that you get, and you've seen this with some of the other presentations. You can work directly with a contact or an event or a piece of mail. You don't have to necessarily deal with the REST representation of that, the OData representation. So it's a lot cleaner than maybe working with something like JSON data or XML data, because you can simply say contact.birthday or contact.full name or email address. So you can get things a little bit easier. There's also CRUD operations. So this is one of our famous little acronyms that stands for create, read, update, and delete. So create, read, update, and delete. So that's what we mean by CRUD operations, is I can do all the types of operations I might want to do on these different objects. If I want to create a new contact, I can do that. If I want to delete one, I can do that. So that's the end of the slides, but we're going to spend a lot more time in Visual Studio. So let me give you just an example here. Let's create a quick Windows app. So I'm going to come out here and say new project. We'll do a universal app that we'll call my universal O365 app. And what we're going to do is go ahead and add a connected service to this. So just like we've been doing, nothing new here. We're just going to say add new connected service. We need to register the app. This is going to tell us what we have access to be able to call into. And I'll just pick a couple. I'll pick a little bit of everything. We'll go ahead and say, let's do read mail. Let's be able to read files from their OneDrive for business site. And let's read contacts. And then a really important one, again, you always want to do this one, and I don't know why it's not always by default, is you want to go to users and groups and say enable sign-on. Right? That's what's going to allow us to be able to sign in to Office 365 from our app. So I'll say OK. And at this point, if I were to run this application, it's really not going to do anything. I'll just play it here on local machine. And you know, it'll pop up, and we'll get just like a blank screen. There we go. Fancy app. What we need to do in order to authenticate is we need to try to get the discovery context. So let's try that here. Let me close out some of the sample files. It does generate a bunch of sample files for me. In fact, let's take a quick look at some of these. So, let's see. So if I go to the mail sample here, you can see it does, this is get messages. So get all the mail messages for a user. The first thing it's going to do, it's going to say, well, we need to make sure that the client has been created. So if we go and look at that, let me go to definition. The first thing that it's doing is going and trying to create a discovery context. So what I'm going to do is let's actually use this property. So I'm just going to put a breakpoint here, and let's actually call this from within our app. So I'm going to go into my page, and let's say when we're navigated to. So on navigated to, we want to go out and basically call that API. One thing I will tell you, again, I'm not trying to teach .NET here, but if you want to call asynchronous methods, it's best to mark the method you're calling it from as async. So I'm just going to add the async keyword there. And I'll actually show you what that does. Let me actually, I'll remove it at first. So let's do var messages equals... what was that? Mail API sample dot get messages. So if I leave this just as is, it will operate, but it should give me a squiggly line here in a moment saying that's an async method and you're basically calling it synchronous. I think it was an async one. Let me see. Yeah, so it should, here in just a second, it should give me a little squiggly line underneath it. So let's just play this. I have my breakpoint here, and let's see what happens now by adding one line of code. That's all we added was one line. So here's our app. You notice that it's coming in here, and it's saying, ensure that the client was created. So I'll just do an F11. That brings us to ensure client created. And on this line of code, it should pop up a login prompt. Let's see if it does it. And it didn't. Oh, here we go. It's because it was async, it goes right over it. So I'll go ahead and say sign. Oh, I forgot I changed his password. So the next step is it's going to say, do you authorize this app? I'll say OK. Now, although I didn't put a breakpoint at the end of it, we should have messages. So let's see. Might need to run it one more time. Let's run it one more time and actually look at our messages. So it's going to launch our dialogue. Oh, because it's async. Well, because it's async, we're not going to be able to get to that. But you could see that it added all of these for me. It added some helper files. All of these three sample files that are here were added when I added my connected service. And they already have things to make it very easy to call out to these. You could delete them if you wanted to add your own controllers. But it's just it's kind of almost like a working README to help you get started faster with some of these APIs. I'm going to come back to this here in just a moment because there is a unfortunate gap that we have today in building these apps with Office 365. So give me one moment and I will come back to this. So I want to show you guys something that will be very helpful to you. You've probably seen a slide talking about going to dev.office.com. I tried to see if they had a Russia one, but they don't. So we're going to go dev.office.com. And this is your one-stop shop for everything. You've seen me show you GitHub. This has a lot more than GitHub, and it has the links to all the GitHub stuff. So lots of information here. I can't localize this to be in Russian because I wouldn't be able to read it. But in this case, I will go to, let's go to resources. And under resources, you can see I have code samples, videos, and podcasts. I'm going to go to code samples. There's lots of great code samples that we've provided. You can see there's a big, big list of those. But the one that I want to point out is the very first one. So if you look at the very first item here, you can see that it is the Office 365 API Starter Project for Windows Store Apps. Let's take a look at this, because this is going to be a really good starter project to understand how to work with this data, or work with our APIs. It'll take you to GitHub, like I mentioned. Takes you out to GitHub. I'm going to download the zip here, just to make it simple. So I'm just going to save this. So here's the starter project. And now I'm going to copy this into a projects area. So, and let's open it in Visual Studio. This is already built to do almost anything you'd want with events and my files. So it goes against Exchange and it goes against OneDrive for Business. Now when you first open this, even though it's all set up and it has all the references, you notice they have little exclamation marks. This is because we've removed the, you need to add the connected service to basically bring those into the project. It also needs to, you need to register it for your tenant. So we're going to do it just like before. We're going to come here and say add connected service. Register the app. And we need to give this permissions to three things. It needs to have full control on my files. It needs full control on events, the calendar. And it needs to be able to sign on with users and groups. So let's go to calendar first and go under permissions and say have full access to the user's calendar. For files, we're going to say the same thing. It needs to be able to edit and delete files, which is the higher level permission. And then finally, for users and groups, we need to enable sign-on. So those are the three, and it actually describes that. If we went back to here, if you look at the bottom, it actually walks you through the process of registering the app. All the instructions are here. But that's it. Once I do this, this app is complete and ready to roll. So it's going to add those references, and what you'll see is some of these warnings will disappear. So watch these warnings. They're going to start disappearing. Looks like we still have a few. Let's see, which ones is it? SharePoint Portable. And they may have, this might be another issue with what they've done last week. For next week, I'm sorry. Let me try one more thing here. Nope. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and open one that's already working. This must be something that they changed. So this is the exact same project. I haven't done anything, but here I was able to add those assembly references earlier, and so it doesn't have any conflict. So I'm going to go and play this, and you can see it basically brings us in, and we have three operations that we can do. We can sign in, and once we sign in, we can look at calendar information or we can work with files. I'm going to first disable some breakpoints. So let's sign in. You can see in this case, our first app that we wrote, we said as soon as the page gets navigated to, show the login prompt. In this case, it was different. We actually made them click a button to sign in. So we'll go ahead and sign in here, and I'm going to sign in as Alex. And it's going to ask us to go ahead and authorize the app to have the permissions that we want. I'll say okay. And at this point, it's going to sign us in. So it'll actually come up here and sign in the user. It'll have the name of the user. So you can see Alex Darrow, and he's a marketing assistant. So at this point, I can start using this app. I'll go into calendar. Now, they didn't put like a really fancy user interface. There's not like a really great looking form here, but it has all of the major operations that you might want to do on events and one on files. So in this case, I could say get my calendar events, and what it'll do is it'll go out and query my calendar for any events that I have today. And in this case, I don't have any events. So let's zoom out and let's create some just really quickly. I created some earlier, but I think they've passed already. So we'll go out to my calendar. Once I get an app bar. There we go. I must have created it for a different user because I don't see them at all. So let's go ahead and add one here. So we'll just say sample event Moscow Office 365 Summit. So now we have a couple of events on here. If I come back to our app, now if I do get calendar events, we should see those two events that are that we just created. So there we got our events. I can click on one. You can see it's a sample event. We can update it. So if I wanted to change the location to Radisson Royal, I can go and basically save that. So as soon as I tab off of this, the update button will become available. So now I can actually update this, and it'll go back and write it within there. I can delete events from here. So if I wanted to delete one of these, I can delete it from the user interface. Now that's gone. So you can see I can do all the basic operations. In fact, I probably could have used just this user interface to create an event. So if I wanted to create event, you can see it created a new event, and then I could rename it Universal App Demo and go ahead and then save it. So just do an update. So we can do basic calendar operations. We can also work with files. So there's lots of cool things that they did with the OneDrive for Business APIs. So in this case, I could go get all of my files and folders. And so this will take just a second. It'll go back and query for all those files. There we go. You can see all my different files here. They did keep this somewhat simple to where the only type of file that it will actually open is a text file. And it'll show you the text file contents over there on the right. But the cool thing is they actually give you a button to create a file. So you probably are like, well, how do we upload a file into OneDrive? Well, what's great is they have a sample in here. I can simply say create a demo.txt file. So go and create that. So now it's in our OneDrive site. In fact, if I were to come back out here, if we go to OneDrive, hopefully, if everything is working as it should, we see there's a demo text file that was created just a few seconds ago by me. I actually created that from a different app, right? Our Office 365 app. In fact, if I click on it here, you can actually see it'll load the file contents. So let me do, there you go. Read text file. The list does not exist. That's what I was worried about. I think we're going to have some issues with the updates they're making. Actually, that looks right. Do this. Oh, gotta let play. Try it one more time. It's getting the user. Mine of exception. Something's locked up. I think I made Visual Studio unhappy. All right. One last time, and then we'll move on. Oh, it's really not happy. Okay, so I'm going to move on from that Visual Studio. But the key is we built a very good starter project that shows you how to do just about anything in a native application. You could probably take that, tweak around the way it looks, add a few more operations, and do something specific. So I certainly encourage you to play with that more. Now that this reloaded, I want to highlight one thing. If you came to the session on Universal Apps, you're probably noticing something interesting. This isn't a Universal App. How many projects does a Universal App have? Three. That's right. A Universal App has three projects. It has a Windows project, a Windows Phone project, and a shared project. This is just a Windows app. Here's where the issue is with Universal Apps. First of all, if you're familiar with how OAuth works, OAuth actually uses what we call a redirect URI. Is once we go through all the process of, you know, going here and there and logging in and authorizing, at the very end of that whole process, we actually are going to redirect the browser to a URI. For a web application, that makes sense. It's probably some view on our web application. But for a native application, it's a little bit different. The native application, it doesn't really have an address that we're familiar with. It actually looks a little bit different. So let me go inside of Azure really quickly. Let me show you what a redirect URL looks like for a native app. So I'm going to go to, let's go to Windows Azure. I'm going to go into my management portal, and you are immediately going to see that I have way too many apps. What? Yes, I do. Oh, hold on. I'm sorry. I had to go in a different user. Actually, I can do this one. I was signed in as Alex, who's like a demo user for me. It's not my real. So he doesn't actually have access to Azure. This user does. So here we are. We're inside of Azure. And let's see if we can't find this project. This is where we started today. We created this project called My Universal O365 App. So I have lots of apps, and that's why I wanted to highlight this one specifically so we can try to find it in the long list of apps that I have. So for those that are new to Azure, I'm simply going to come down here to Active Directory. I'm going to go inside of my Active Directory, and then I'm going to go to the Applications tab that's inside of Azure Active Directory. So that's the important place right here is Applications. And don't laugh at me, but I have like pages and pages and pages of them. So we're looking for My Universal O3C. So here it is right here. So let me click on this guy, and let's go to the Configure tab. And what I want to highlight is this URI, or redirect URI. For a normal application, in fact, let me maybe go to a normal application. Let's go to like Office 365 Help Desk. If I go into this Help Desk application, you notice that the redirect URL is an actual web address, HTTPS, and then some address. For our native app, that My Universal Office 365 app, that redirect URI looks a lot different. It's this ms-app:// That is a native Windows app redirect. And every Windows app you create has its own unique redirect. That's why it looks like there's like a GUID at the end here. This thing is long. If I were to copy the entire redirect, you can see it's quite long. And that is unique for this application. It's guaranteed to be unique. So if you're a developer, you create your own app, you're going to get a unique ID. So one of the challenges of a universal app, because really a universal app is two apps in one. You have a Windows app and you have a Windows phone app. One of the challenges is right now the wizard has no way of putting the second redirect in here. Now I can manually add it, and that's what we're going to actually have to do, is manually add the second redirect, but that's the process that's one of the challenges that we have with universal apps. I think that this will get solved soon, but as it stands today, the Connected Service Wizard has no ability to add two redirects. Let me show you a working app here. Let's go to, I gotta see the name of this one. Let's go to this one. Oh, no, next one down. So you notice in here, I actually have no clue why there are three. There should only be two. Actually, these look the same. 3, 9. Yeah, these are the same, so I could delete one. I'm not sure how two got in there, but I'll go ahead and delete one manually and save it. This has two because I came in here and manually changed this. That's the whole reason I took this 5-minute kind of sidetrack to show you this inside the management portal, because if you want to try building a universal app that uses Office 365, you have to come in here and manually add the other redirect. Now, it's pretty easy to figure out what that redirect is. It's one line of code. I actually am close to posting a blog post about this because it's really not documented anywhere right now. I say that. It is documented. It's in GitHub for this session. But ultimately, there's a line of code that I can put a breakpoint on and be able to see what that is. So let me just quickly go in here into my controller. And where we find that at is, oh, it's right here. So this is our controller. And if I zoom in on this, what you'll see is when a new instance of the controller is created, we're going to call this thing called windows.security.authentication.web. .web authentication broker.getCurrentApplicationCallbackURI. That's really long. Don't worry. It's documented. It's on GitHub, and it'll be on my blog. But this line of code will tell us what the redirect is. So if I put this breakpoint here and just started my app, this app immediately tries to go out and connect to Office 365. So it's going to stop me here. I can simply just do step over this and copy that app URI. So you can see there's that URI. So I could simply just go here and say, okay, let me grab it and then take it and paste it into the Azure portal. I'm hoping that within the next month or two, this isn't necessary, but today it's necessary. Okay, that's step one of why universal apps are a little bit challenging with the Office 365 APIs. And if it were just that, we'd probably be in good shape. But unfortunately, there's more challenges. As it stands today, if I go to a universal app project, actually, let me go into the other one. Here we go. If I go into this universal app project, one of the things that you'll see is that the references, all of the assembly references, are in the individual projects, right? So if you look up here, I'll kind of zoom in. So here's our Windows project, and you can see it has its own references. And Windows Phone project has its own references. The reason for that is some of the references, because not everything is the same across phone and device yet. I told you we're like 90 or 95% there. Some references don't work in both. And even the ones that do work in both might be slightly different between the two. And so one of the unfortunate things is the portable libraries for Office 365, as it stands today, do not work for a Windows Phone project. It hurts my heart that is true, but unfortunately that is the case. So if I were to open up references here, you'll see things like OAuth and being able to do OAuth against Windows Store, the Active Directory portable library. Some of those we'll find in our Windows Phone project, but you notice that there are significant things missing. I don't have a SharePoint portable library. It's not there. I also don't have an Exchange portable library. It's not there. What that means is, instead of using SDKs, I have to write REST calls to go against those APIs in a Windows Phone project. So this is something that we're actively working on. In fact, one of the things, when you add a connected service, one of the things that it adds to the project is this README file to the Windows phone project, right? So this is the phone project. It adds this README file. And if we look in that README file, it basically says to learn more about the support of the Office 365 client libraries, go to this link. And if you go to this link, it's basically a blog post from the product group, from the engineering group, that says, I'm sorry, but today we don't support those portable libraries for Windows Phone. So there's a big thing that talks about how to do these, and down here at the bottom, there it is. Support for Windows Phone 8.1 projects in Visual Studio, and it ultimately says, we'll help you do all the authentication stuff, right? You saw the OAuth libraries, they were there, but we don't have libraries for you to go and say get files or get events, create event. You have to call the REST endpoints. Now, I don't think that it's that big of a deal. In fact, my thought is if I have to write any REST, I might as well just use REST between both Windows and Windows Phone and not even use the portable libraries until they exist for both. That's kind of the approach that I've taken. Because I don't think REST is that big of a deal to be able to do. So that's actually what out on GitHub for this module, I developed a true universal app that uses REST against Office 365. So here's my project. The cool thing about this is it's a multi-page app, so it actually does navigation between pages. But I would say 90% of the logic all lives in the shared project here. So if you look at my controller, I do REST calls to get my data. So you can see, here it is, I have a get JSON where I put an access token in the header, I ask for JSON data back, and then I go and I parse that out. So, and I do get files, all of that is done using REST. I don't use any of the SDK libraries. And it was, you know, this was pretty easy to write. It only took a couple of hours to put together. So let me show you this application that uses pure REST to communicate with the Office 365 APIs. Actually, let me do something different here. Let me close this. And I'm going to uninstall it. I'm uninstalling it because this does a good job of caching the token. So you notice that it just automatically went and got data. That's not realistic. The realistic thing is that when I launch this, it should take me to log in. So there you go. It immediately takes me to log in. So I'll go ahead and log in as me. Actually, I'm going to log in as someone named Alex again. I'll sign in, and then this is going to go and get all of the user's images. It's going to look at all of the files, regardless of folder. It could be nested deep in a folder, and it's going to go find all the images and display them here. And in this case, we're using just a neat simple grid view. If I click on an image, this will go through and now there's a glitch in the service right now, so I'm going to hack this a little bit, and I apologize for that. They're rolling out some new features. So if you look here, it's doing a /me for this API, but that's not correct. And so I'm going to change this to be what it should be. There we go. And now it should bring back the image that we want. So I'll go ahead and remove some of these breakpoints. Unless they broke one other thing. Okay, give me 1 second. I'm going to try one other thing here. I'm going to start this over, and I'm going to get the right URI from the beginning. All right, so here's our resources. I'm going to fix the My Site one because they're in the process of messing it up on me. Okay. So now we got our images, and if I click on image 8, I forgot I'm getting it every time. And again, for those that haven't been aware, there's some changes that are going on for TechEd next week. So that broke this code. There we go, and it brings back our image, and it's, as I scroll to different images, it'll basically do, I need to hack the code to, all right, and there we go. You notice that like I have a nice ability to just swipe between the different images here. It's very easy to swipe back and forth. I want you to pay attention to that as we go and look at this on Windows Phone. So I'll click back and I have my list. So let's look at the same app now on Windows Phone. And again, it's able to share all of the same code. There is some device-specific things. So I want to point out this. This is kind of a neat thing that we can do is in the shared project of a universal app, I can use this conditional statement that says if Windows Phone app, and I could put an else on it, and this is actually how I can write one file to where these get processed compile time. So it's basically compile time constants is what we call it, a compile time constant. So when I build this for Windows Phone, this is what's going to get compiled into the assembly versus if it's Windows, it's this line. So this is just a little example of how some of the code is a little different, but we can still handle it even in the shared project. So normally, if I had to do things different, I would have to have pulled this out and put it in the individual file project. So let's go to Windows Phone and set it as the startup. And let's see how Windows Phone operates. So here it's loading. And here's our app. And again, it should immediately bring us to a login form, which is what it's doing. You can see the little waiting indicator that's going across the screen. And as it goes and connects, we can, you notice that it shows the app name here. This is the web authentication broker for Windows Phone. It's pretty much the same code. Actually, this is what I used that special block for, was to, because it's treated a little bit differently. Actually, let's do Alex. I'm using Alex because here you'll be able to see Alex's password. I'll log in. In this case, I'll just say no. So now it's going to go process, and it should go and pull back all of our files here. I'm just going to let it go in this case. So we should get our files back. You can see that it automatically adjusted nicely for this form factor. And now if I were to go into, say, picture 8, I'll have to fix our API because that service is broken right now. But now it should bring back Tim's picture. And you can see that, again, I'm able to have a user experience that is consistent, but it's optimized for this type, this size device. So again, I'll just do 2. So you can see I can swipe between the different images. And the other difference here, this is a pretty key difference, is Windows Phone is required, any maker of a Windows Phone, whether it's Nokia, Samsung, HTC, is required to have a back button on the phone. So you can see I have a back button. Well, Windows doesn't have that. The only thing Windows is required to have is a Windows button. So I have a Windows button right there on the device, but but I have no back button. So that's another area where we can do things a little bit more specific for each one of the projects. So in this case, when I click the back button, you can see it brings us back to here. So this is a really good example. If you look below, I have a partial class for both of my pages. I have a list page and I have a detail page. And you can see that here. Here's the list page, which is just the main page. There's the detail page in the shared project. Almost all of my logic resides in those files. However, how I treat the back button needs to be different. So if I were to go into the Windows Phone project and look at the implementation here, you can see I'm wiring into the hardware back button. Right? You can see that. It's the hardware back button. And I'm saying when the back button is pressed, then just go back one level in the history. It's going back one in the history. Now, if I go to the Windows project, but actually, let me stop there. Look at that. There's like hardly any code in this page. It's all in my partial class that's shared between the two. So let me go into the Windows app. And it's basically the same thing, but in this case, I actually have a button in the user interface. So I actually copied all of the XAML. I needed to add an additional back button because this doesn't have a hardware back button. Make sense? Cool. Well, that's all I had for this session. So if you guys have any questions about universal apps, the project that I just went through here, it's hot off the presses. I just finished it for engineering like at the beginning of the week. So it's out on GitHub now. That being said, let me show you one trick about GitHub. If you go to training content, is anyone new to GitHub? Anyone use GitHub? Okay. So when you go to GitHub by default, it uses the concept of branches. So just like normal source control, like if you use Team Foundation Server or SourceSafe or whatever, yeah, it has branches. There is a dev branch that has content that we haven't completely validated yet. So if you go down into this project, in the dev branch, you'll find the universal app. So it's right here, demo universal app, and you can see this walks you through the entire process. Talks about how do I go register both redirects. It basically takes you through everything. So anyway, look in the dev branch. It'll show up in master eventually, but for now I think it's just in the dev branch. Cool. Any questions? Awesome. Thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate you all coming to the summit. It's been a pleasure for myself and Steve and everyone. Please fill out evaluations. That's really important to us. We want to know how we can make these things better. If you didn't like the lunch, tell them, or if you need something else to make this better next time we're here in Russia, let us know. And again, really appreciate it. If you guys need to contact me for any reason, the easiest two ways are on Yammer. I had people shoot messages to me last night on Yammer with different questions they had. The other way you can do it is my Twitter handle is RichDizz, so just RichDizz, and follow me, @mention me. I'd be happy to help you out however I can. So thanks a lot.